You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by the Brand Driven Digital Event Series, featuring the Social Brand Forum. This industry-leading digital marketing event brings the best and brightest thought leaders to the heart of the heartland for 2 days of insightful keynotes and interactive discussions. Learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Dori Clark. Dori is a marketing strategy consultant, professional speaker, and frequent contributor to the Harvard Business Review, Forbes, Entrepreneur, and the World Economic Forum blog. Recognized as a branding expert by the Associated Press, Fortune, and Inc. magazine, she is the author of Reinventing You, which has been translated into Russian, Chinese, Arabic, French, Polish, and Thai. Her next book, Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It, will be released this April. Clark consults and speaks for a diverse range of clients, including Google, the World Bank, Microsoft, Morgan Stanley, the Ford Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Yale University, the Mount Sinai Medical Center, and the National Park Service. Clark, a former presidential campaign spokeswoman, is an adjunct professor of business administration at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business and a visiting professor for IE Business School in Madrid, Spain. She has been named to the Huffington Post's 100 Must Follow on Twitter list for 2013 and 2014, and to the Nifty 50 list of top women on Twitter. Dori, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you so much, Nick. Great to be here.
So that covered all of the important points about you, but what's maybe a fun fact that isn't there in the bio that the folks listening may not know?
Oh my goodness. Well, one thing that's coming up actually is I am going to be, so as part of my teaching for Duke's Fuqua School of Business, they actually have a partnership with a university in Kazakhstan. And so in a couple of weeks, I am going to be going to Kazakhstan and teaching a marketing class there for Kazakh MBA students. So that's probably going to be my most unusual travel opportunity of 2015.
That is probably not something that everyone can say. That's impressive. So prior to Kazakhstan, where was your most interesting speaking journey before that?
Oh, that's a good question. Earlier in 2014, in sort of the early winter of 2014, I actually had a really cool experience where I spent about a month on the road visiting five countries in Asia and giving talks along the way there. So that was kind of part of a belated book launch for my book, Reinventing You. So I spoke at the U.S. consulate in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. I lectured at a university and did some corporate engagements in Singapore. And I also spoke at a couple of events in Hong Kong. So those were a few highlights that I had that were pretty cool.
Well, after Kazakhstan, I would say that your passport is stamped. You have, you've officially been everywhere.
It's getting crowded. It's true.
So, okay, now I got to ask on the other side of that. I said, where prior to Kazakhstan was the most interesting? And how about after that? What's the next thing that you thought, you know, now that I've been here, what if? Is there anything else on the horizon that you can see?
Well, in addition to Kazakhstan, one of the things that I learned is that if you are going to go to Kazakhstan, there's not a lot of direct flights going there. Ooh. And so as a result of that, I figured I would take the opportunities while they pass them. And so I'm doing a layover in Istanbul. And so I'm actually spending about a week in Turkey prior to going to Kazakhstan, and am going to be exploring around. I've never been to Istanbul, but I've also hooked up with the embassy there, and I'm going to be doing, I think at this point they have me booked for maybe 4 or 5 different talks in Istanbul to different groups, talking about entrepreneurship. I'll be speaking at a university. I'll be speaking to a group of LGBT activists in Istanbul, so that'll be pretty interesting.
Very cool. That's very cool. I have heard great things from people that have been to Turkey and spoken there, and I hear Istanbul is beautiful.
I am pretty pumped for it.
So, speaking of what you speak about often, which is the topic of branding, I always ask someone, since branding is kind of such a sprawling topic, you know, for some, it's kind of an interesting slice of the business world to be an expert on. So what was your personal journey that led you to being a branding expert?
Well, for me, Nick, it was a bit of a circuitous journey because I started out after I finished graduate school as a political journalist. And, you know, I was very happy doing that. I thought it was a really interesting job. But about a year into the start of my career, I got laid off. And so I had to find something else for myself to do. And so I spent a lot of my 20s trying different careers. I was a spokesperson on a presidential campaign, which I'm sure you can appreciate out there in Iowa.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I was running the operations on the other side of the country. I was the New Hampshire communications director on our campaign. So I actually never did head out into the caucuses. Although, actually, afterwards, our campaign spun off a nonprofit that does political training, and so I did do a training for people who are interested in local politics in Cedar Rapids a number of years ago.
That is just up the interstate from me, so.
There we go. So I did some of that stuff. I ran a nonprofit for a while. I made a documentary film. So I did all of these different things. And finally, about 8 years ago or 8.5 years ago, I started my consulting business, which has now spawned a lot of different directions. And that's kind of the umbrella under which I do my speaking and my business school teaching and my writing. So it's been a circuitous adventure.
Yeah, and you know, one that I totally follow as well. I mean, you talked about umbrella. Do you find that? I mean, 'cause to me, it would seem like there is a brand communications connection between political journalism, political campaigns, nonprofits, consulting. Is that? Do you see that? Has that kind of followed you along the way? Did you kind of recognize that and extract that from what you were doing?
Yeah, I think all of those things are very much connected. What I have discovered is that the way that marketing is evolving, there's a lot of talk about the rise of big data and analytics, which is critical. I mean, it's really important. It's something that people need to understand, but also just as important, just as salient, is the rise of content marketing. And that's something that, you know, all journalists are essentially trained in. And even though journalism as a profession really has collapsed in the last decade, I mean, in fact, from 2000 to 2010, nearly 40% of American newsroom journalists lost their jobs. The profession has changed, but the skills that people need to be successful, they really haven't changed. And so I think a lot of journalists have found new homes for themselves, new second careers, because they have learned how to tell stories well. And as we're shifting into a pull economy rather than a push economy, you know, a place where you have to, as a brand, convince customers that, no, they really want to come visit your content. They really want to come check you out. You're not forcing them into it anymore. You've got to give them a really darn good reason to do it. And having that kind of content orientation, that storytelling orientation, I think has been valuable. And that's been the through line that has helped me in the course of my career.
That's interesting, too. You bring up journalism and kind of the fall of the practice. But I am an adjunct here at the University of Iowa, and I teach courses in the College of Business and in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication. And I think there's this odd kind of Venn diagram of all of these overlapping areas that I don't know if higher ed has totally seen how all of these things, because they are all connected and not in ways that they have been before. Like you said, I mean, journalism's always been on the content side. Now all of a sudden businesses and brands are saddled with this task of content creation. How do you see that shift in higher ed adapting to what's happening out there at businesses everywhere?
Yeah, it's really interesting to watch. Certainly doing a lot of business school teaching, and for many years I taught undergrads. I taught in every university. They slice it a little differently. In some places I taught in the communications department. In some I taught actually in the government department. In academia, things take a really long time. These decisions about even things like what courses to offer, I mean, they can take years to be approved. And in fact, most business schools don't have courses on social media. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that something that is so critical and is shaping the economy in such huge ways. I mean, of course, it's sort of bleeding in around the edges a little bit. People are incorporating it into their existing classes. But this is a major force that people need to understand. And in fact, they're expecting business school students or undergraduates to understand it. I mean, if you're 22 years old and you don't have a good grasp of social media and how it works, the people who are hiring you are like, what's wrong with you? It's a really different thing knowing how to use Snapchat or Instagram for your personal use as compared to understanding how to really use it for strategic business purposes. We need to be giving people this information. And I think because of the fiefdoms and the way that the silos are drawn in academia, things are just very slow. And, this is why, unfortunately, the peril that I've faced, I'm in my 30s, and everything that I grew up liking or thinking would be an awesome profession has basically collapsed in the past 10 to 15 years. Like, oh, newspapers, yeah, I love that. Oh, music, yeah, I'll be a rock star. Oh, no. Oh, I could be a professor. Oh, no. And, the ironic thing is that in some ways I've gotten to do all of these things. I mean, not be a rock star, but,
Yet.
That's so true. all these things are very accessible now, but the way that they were and the fact that, they were – these very steady, stable, good middle-class jobs. I mean, none of that is operative now. You've got to really be entrepreneurial. You've got to find new ways to monetize these things. And, academia is 100% going to be disrupted. You've got very interesting startups like Minerva out of San Francisco, which is a nonprofit, but it's attached to a for-profit company that is leveraging the pedagogical tool that they have created online, and it's a venture-backed startup that is attempting to disrupt colleges. I actually met the guy who's the dean there. He left his tenured position at Harvard to go do this. So really interesting stuff. I mean, clearly there's been tons of press about MOOCs and all this, but you know, I mean, there's a place for higher ed. I'm a big fan of it, yeah. but it is moving too slow. And if it doesn't get with the picture quickly, there's going to be some serious consequences for it as an industry.
Well, I feel like, especially when you think of it as an industry, when you talk about, you know, what you can get with faster moving for-profit entities as well. So, but, you know, I think, like you talk about not having courses in social media, I'm actually the course in social media at the University of Iowa.
Good job, Nick!
I know. But it seems like that kind of this V1 solution is, you know, standalone coursework on new topic X.
Yeah.
Whereas I think beyond that, you know, the next shift, which again, it's hard enough to add a single course, but I think beyond that is, you know, some fostering, you know, better collaboration between, you know, your content creators who may live in communication, journalism, and your business marketing types as well.
Yes, I think that's all true, and I agree with you. I mean, I think that one source of the stasis, I mean, it's like human laziness, but you've got professors, and they've invested a lot of time in creating a syllabus and creating lecture notes, yeah. And it's a lot easier to just recycle the same thing for 10 years, you know? So they're not going to really add social media in a substantive way until they're forced to, and until they look like morons for not having it in their course. I think there's sort of this inertia, but yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I think that it is worthy of having a standalone course, but it also, just as in the world of business, you know, you started out with standalone digital agencies, and now they've largely been acquired and have been assimilated as wings in broader PR and marketing firms, because every firm needs to have it and to think holistically that way.
To even take a step back beyond different forms of media and where those should be taught, how they should be taught, how about the discipline of branding? Where does that go? Because that's not a new thing by any stretch, but it seems similarly as lost. You know, where do you put branding in higher ed?
Yeah. Branding in higher ed, it's a really good question. I mean, I think that ultimately, when you are thinking about how to structure the landscape of these courses and things like that, branding, it can fall through the cracks sometimes, yeah. Because there may be a marketing track or a marketing department. There's never a branding department. And so it's almost like nobody really knows where it fits or how to claim it. And marketing, interestingly, is becoming an increasingly analytical discipline. And, you know, now, you know, I give talks all the time to CIOs, chief information officers, and they are really freaking out and really paranoid because they're – turf in some cases is being threatened and supplanted by CMOs. Mm-hmm. And those things are getting ever closer together because the technology is being used in service of marketing. And if you get the marketers who are digitally savvy and analytically savvy, you don't necessarily need a CIO to be making those calls anymore. But so the more you get into the numbers, it raises the question. I mean, you know, it's sort of the math majors versus English major divide.
Yeah.
You know, well, what is a brand? And you know, is this storytelling really valuable? And what's the ROI? And inevitably, you're sort of faced with question marks about it.
Yeah, my joke was going to be that the capital M marketing folks that might be a little more analytical, to them, you know, branding is kind of, you know, subjugated to that. It's that marketing that you can't measure.
That's right.
Chalk it up to branding. So given that, you know, what does branding mean to you? I mean, what kind of definition do you kind of have in place?
Yeah. When it comes to branding, I would say that, you know, and my book, Reinventing You, is really squarely about personal branding. And so I have a lot of thoughts about how you know, how branding looks for individuals versus for corporations and things like that. But I mean, fundamentally at its core, whether you are talking about a person or a business, your brand is what people say about you when you leave the room. It is the perception that others hold about you. You might have a goal of what your brand is, or you know what you would want it to be, but when it comes to what it really is, it's okay. What is the impression that others have of you? And if it is not what you would like it to be, how then, the next question is, do you close that gap?
You know, I was a big proponent of personal branding. I am as well. I sometimes find, I'm sure you do, that every now and then you're met with some eye rolls on the topic of personal branding. Some even suggesting that it's not a thing. I mean, what do you say to personal branding specifically?
Yeah, there's plenty of blowback about personal branding. I mean, some people they kind of want to stick their heads in the sand and say, oh, I don't want to deal with that. Why do I have to deal with that? That sounds stupid. That sounds vain somehow or narcissistic. But you know, really, what I say in pushing back against that is, you know, great. You can ignore it all you want, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. Your personal branding may be modern terminology. You know, that may be terminology that we didn't use, 20 years ago. But really what we're talking about is a concept that has existed from the beginning of time, which is your reputation. This is a conversation about your reputation. And if there is anyone out there that says, oh, I don't care what my reputation is, then, you know, I'd like to give them a good shake, because that, you know, I think that most people who have been in business for a while understand that your reputation is actually the most important thing about you. That's the thing that is going to persist and linger and make people decide if they want to do business with you in the first place or do business with you again. And so being cognizant of your personal brand, i.e. your reputation, is, I think, one of the smartest things that you can do. Because if for some reason there is a disconnect that you are picking up on between how you want to be seen by others and how you actually are being seen, then you need to fix that ASAP, because otherwise that gap is going to be the thing that is costing you opportunities, it's costing you money, and is preventing you from achieving what you really want to achieve.
Who are some of your favorite examples of personal brands?
Well, you know, one of the people who comes, of course, immediately to mind is Tim Ferriss. And part of why I'm impressed with his personal branding, and, you know, he's done it in such an interesting and dramatic way, is this is a guy who shot to fame now, you know, seven plus years ago by writing The 4-Hour Workweek, mm-hmm. which is a business book. And then he follows it up with a fitness book. And then he follows that up with a cooking book. And it's amazing genre busting that I think for a lot of people, you know, I mean, if it was a regular person, publishers would never permit it. They wouldn't, you know, no one wants to buy, you know, Tom Peters's cookbook. No one wants to read about, you know, the fitness regimen of Clayton Christensen.
Somewhere there's a single tear going down Tom Peters' cheek right now.
I think so. And he is in very good shape, I have to say. The guy is looking good. But I'm not sure that he could launch, you know, a multi-million dollar line with, you know, oh my God, I have to know what his secrets are. But Tim Ferriss was able, through very, very savvy branding, to create an umbrella that made room for all of those things. And I don't mean the umbrella of the 4-hour or whatever. I mean, that's just really the tip of the iceberg there. I mean, it's nice that he had that continuity. But really what I'm talking about is that he refused to be pegged as, oh, he's a business author, he needs to write more business books. He created his own category, which he called lifestyle design. And he was able to build very successfully a community around that of people who wanted to live awesome lives in all capacities, you know, whether it was your health or your fitness, your diet, whatever. And they became such rabid fans that they were willing literally to buy anything he put out. And I think if you can inspire that kind of brand loyalty among your audience, you are exactly where you need to be.
So what, you know, is kind of a tease of Reinventing You, for those that aren't familiar or haven't read it, you know, how does one go about doing that?
So ultimately, Nick, the way that I think of professional reinvention is that there are three steps to it. The first step is that you have to get clear on what your current brand is, because none of us is starting from a blank slate. We all have some kind of a brand. People think something about you. And if you don't know what it is very, very hard to ever successfully get to the place you want to be. So that's number one. Number two is about then creating the vision of what your brand should be and thinking through, okay, if there is a gap between where I am now and where I'm going, what do I need to do? What kind of, you know, remedial steps do I need to take? Maybe it's about learning new things. Maybe it's about taking some classes, learning skills. Maybe it's about improving certain elements or practicing virtues. But whatever it is, how do you create that vision and then take the steps to close the gap to get there? And then third and finally, it is living your brand. And what I mean by that is that for all of us, you know, your brand is about a lot more than just what you say it is. It's not just your elevator pitch. It is everything that people perceive about you. And so if you really want people to get it when it comes to your brand, you have to live consistently. You have to live authentically. That's where, you know, people sort of throw around almost to the point of ridiculousness. Oh, authenticity matters, blah, blah, blah. But really what they're saying is that your brand is something that's established over time. It's not like a one hit, oh, here's my spiel, here's who I am, boom, okay, that's your brand. No, it's that you see people over and over again and you come to understand their brand based on how they treat you, based on what they say, what they talk about, who they hang out with, what you find when you Google them, all these things. And that has to be 100% consistent. Otherwise, when people see discordant information, it renders the rest of it irrelevant. And they say, wait a minute, there's a problem here. Something is amiss. And everything is called into question. So you need to live it with consistency and authenticity.
So is there any one thing that you think most brand builders are missing?
I think that the biggest challenge that people have, and I think, you know, for experienced marketers and branders, they're probably better at this than most, but I still think that for a lot of us, we could be paying more attention to it. There is the assumption, the perhaps human assumption, that people are going to figure it out. That, you know, if you are creating something interesting and good, that people will get what you're trying to do. And something that I have made it my mission over the past couple of years to try to really underline is that people are not going to figure it out. They are not going to take the time. They are not going to care enough to piece it together and figure it out and try to understand what you're doing. You have to create the narrative. You have to control the narrative. Because if you are not doing that, if you are not literally explaining to other people how to think of you, particularly if you are making a transition, they're just going to come up with something and it's probably not going to be right and it's probably not going to be flattering, or they might not think about you at all. And that's not what you want. You need to frame it for them.
You know, it's a little political pivot, probably around the time you were doing your work in New Hampshire, which I want to come back to. At whatever desk I was at then, I, you know, whenever I find quotes, I like to, you know, cut them out, put them up on my desk in my cubicle at the time. And one I had around then that probably didn't make it through a few office moves was, I think it was a James Carville one saying exactly that, that you can't expect the public to know something unless you tell it to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So speaking of politics, you know, I do want to talk about that a little bit, because I was, of course, in Iowa in the time, and I was actually an Iowa caucus volunteer for the Dean campaign.
So oh my gosh!
I got to see and meet the governor a few times, and I think in my war chest of political mementos, I have some people-powered Howard buttons.
Oh my goodness! Do you have an orange hat, Nick?
I don't have an orange hat.
Oh, you get screwed. I know. So sorry.
I know, but you know, I thought it was a great campaign, and in hindsight, as we look at, you know, the increasingly digital nature of politics, I mean, I always think of the Dean campaign as kind of being like one of those ice-breaking ships that, you know, it made the way for everything that came after it.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I'm not alone. I know many have said that there, you know, wouldn't be, you know, so many of these successes of the Obama campaign without kind of that V1 of the Dean campaign through that. And I really think it was one of the probably first legitimate, what we, you know, by another name, a digital marketing team.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, it's 100% true. It's not just a theory, it's a fact. The field director on Obama's most recent campaign, Jeremy Byrd, was one of my colleagues in New Hampshire on the Dean campaign. We sat just, you know, probably 5 feet away from each other. I was just reading an article today about, you know, the big political speculation these days, of course, is who is going to be the campaign manager for Hillary Clinton. And the two leading candidates, at least as of the moment, according to Politico, are Robbie Mook and Stephanie Shriok. Robbie Mook was the campaign manager for Terry McAuliffe's successful bid for Virginia governor. Stephanie Shriok is the head of Emily's List, the Democratic PAC.
She's also in my inbox a fair amount.
Hey, there we go. That's right. Both of them, my colleagues on the Dean campaign. So even though, you know, they've done a lot of things in the interim, that was really their training ground in a lot of ways. Robbie was a deputy field director in New Hampshire on the Dean campaign, and Stephanie was our national finance director. So the Dean campaign, I think, created a lot of good training, a lot of imprints that the strands a decade later are continuing to be felt.
Yeah, and you know, I think also the other thing it kind of set the tone for is that before this, the first one to really start employing all of these digital tools, and I think it sort of set the stage for this experimentation that I think we all have to do. You know, whether, you know, it's not just political campaigns, we all have to be experimenting with, you know, what was new at the time. At that time, it was Meetup and different things, but I had not heard of Meetup until the Dean campaign.
Yeah, it's exactly right. I mean, that kind of focus, that kind of iteration is something that that we all really need to be doing. I mean, I did press on the Dean campaign. I was around the digital effort. I certainly don't take any credit for the digital effort. I came up doing very traditional media stuff. And so a lot of this stuff, I mean, it was somewhat mystifying to me. I count myself as being one of these observers that's like, really, what? I was working in... So I ended up as the New Hampshire communications director. I started out as the deputy national press secretary working in Burlington at the headquarters. And Joe Trippi, our campaign manager, you know, I remember I would have these things that, you know, I felt were really quite important. You know, CNN wanted a statement on XYZ, and I needed to run it by Joe before I could send it out. And, you know, I would literally, and, you know, the caveat being he was not the best manager in the world, but I would walk by his office and I'd be like, Joe, I've got to read you this statement. And he'd be like, go away. And he'd, you know, it's like scream and wave me off. And so I'd be like, okay. And, you know, so like at half an hour later, I'd come back again, go away. And you know, I'd be thinking like, what is he doing? What is so important that he can't, you know, take the time to do this statement for CNN? And I'd find out afterwards, he had been working on a blog post. I'm like, are you joking? But he, you know, he really had a lot of foresight and perspicacity about the importance that that would take on the campaign.
Well, you know, I don't. It's never easy as a brand to be the one that goes first. But you look at all those things, and here, you know, I guess a decade later, you know, you'd look back, and of course, you'd be spending time on a blog post or a something. But you know, so if there's one tip that you could tell someone staring at the blank page today to focus on, what would it be?
Well, I think that you know, for anyone who's having trouble with knowing where to get started, or you know, sort of writer's block, I think that the most important thing for me in terms of my content creation, which I turn out content at a pretty good clip, and you know, on average, it'll be a blog post every, you know, 2 or 3 days, and for me, what I'm really drawing on is my training as a journalist, not even so much, you know, in the sense of like, oh, here's how to construct a story, here's how to construct the sentences. What I'm drawing on is the fact that when you are a journalist, there's always a deadline, and you can't be overly precious about what you're doing. I was down in Florida earlier this week, you know, doing a writer's residency, and there was a great guy who was running the program, and you know, we were talking about Twitter, and he said, you know, Dory, the problem that I have with Twitter, you know, is like I'm scared to post it. I'm always, you know, I take my tweets, and it takes me like 10 minutes per tweet because I'm always revising it, and you know, it's, I feel like it's never clever enough, and you know, I'm like, okay, you know, here we go. So I'm like, come here. So I grabbed him, I took a picture, you know, like a selfie of us on the phone, and, you know, I just, you know, banged out, like, having a great time at, you know, and I tagged him, and I tagged the place, and I sent it. I'm like, look, really, like, you can read it to make sure there's not a spelling mistake, but you should not be overthinking it. As a journalist, what you learn more than anything is that the deadline comes first. And the paper has to go to print no matter what. And so as long as it's good enough, it's good enough. And I think getting over the fear of having to create something brilliant or perfect is probably the most important thing.
You know, that's something I say a lot, but never so concisely. I love the idea of saying that we can't be overly precious, because I've never heard it phrased that way, but I know exactly what you mean, and I think it it captures the offending mood appropriately.
Yeah, well, you're right there at the heart of the Iowa Writers Workshop. It's, you know, you're you know, perhaps preciousness central.
Yeah. Well, and it also makes me think of you know, to keep on our political jag, what was it that they released recently, that the Romney campaign had to have 22 people approve a tweet?
The
joke kind of makes itself. But beyond that, I do talk with businesses with a similar mindset, and
yeah,
you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, the point is you gotta be speedy. You know, I mean, of course, it helps to be clever, but no one will expect you to be clever 100% of the time.
Yeah, yeah. So as we start to wrap up, what brand has made you smile lately?
You know, I think that for me, some of the best brands, it's really about feeling like you are talking to a friend. It's about feeling like you understand the personality behind it. And so one thing that that I've really been enjoying, because one of my goals for 2015 is to continue my education in online marketing. So I've been reading a lot of stuff on the blog of OK Dork and AppSumo, which are run by a guy named Noah Kagan. And both of those things, you know, both of those blogs and, you know, newsletters have a really great feel, a really great personality to them that makes them very engaging. And they're providing highly targeted content that they have a pretty good sense are going to be of interest to their subscribers. And I think, you know, that's really the goal for all of us, is how do you create something that people are really pumped to see in their inbox? And, you know, inbox is critical here because, you know, I'm sure this is a drum that you and many others beat regularly. But more and more, as we see, you know, on these social networks, you know, particularly Facebook, anytime they change their algorithms, somebody new gets hit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your organic reach is just going to keep declining, because this is a publicly traded company that needs to make money and they want you to pay for eyeballs. And so it's nice to have a good following, but it's not going to get you that much over time. What is going to get you a lot is building your email list and having a direct relationship with customers. And the more you can prioritize that, the better off we're going to be.
Absolutely. So one more thing I wanted to also mention is tell us a bit about the new book coming this April.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. Yeah. The new book is called Stand Out, How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. And the basic idea, it's a book for people who want to become recognized as an expert in their field, a book for people who want to start a movement to get their ideas out there and really make an impact. And so what I do in the book is I interviewed about 50 thought leaders in different professions, some of them well-known in the business world, like Seth Godin or a David Allen or a Daniel Pink, some of them from very diverse fields like genomics or real estate or urban planning. And I write about how those folks actually achieved renown as thinkers for their ideas, and try to break down that process so that people who are interested in doing the same thing can have a kind of playbook to do so.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that here as well. Where's the best place for people to go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Thank you, Nick. My website is doryclark.com, doryclark.com. I'm on Twitter at doryclark. And actually, on my website, I have about 400 free articles that I have written. So if people are interested in diving further into the labyrinth of marketing and branding and social media, there's a lot of good stuff on there. And of course, to practice what I preach, I have an e-newsletter where people get access to my very best stuff, and you can sign up for that on my website.
Awesome. Entering the Branding Labyrinth with Dory Clark will have to be the title of this episode here.
Love it.
Dory, thanks for being on Brand with us.
Thank you so much. Take care.
And finally, I wanted to give a big thanks to a mentor of this podcast with a resource that you should know more about. Jay Baer of Convince and Convert has done it again. In addition to being a digital marketing thought leader, speaker, and best-selling author, he's now created a new online resource indexing all of the great marketing podcasts out there. It's called Marketing Podcasts, and you can find it at marketingpodcasts.com. If you like marketing and podcasts, you need to check this out. Last but not least, as indicated, show notes to everything that Dory talked about can be found at branddrivendigital.com. You can also subscribe to the show there via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, podcasters live and die by those ratings and reviews. Head over to iTunes, click on the stars, drop in a couple of sentences for comments to leave a review up there to help others find the show. And don't forget that this podcast is brought to you by our Brand Driven Digital event series. Learn more about Twitter Brand Basics, Digital Strategy Bootcamp, and the industry-leading Social Brand Forum at branddrivendigital.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.